Buddha. She advised.
So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 4, texts number 17 and 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhaktikanam shabhavanam shakti harasham chatatkritam ashraddhanam nisatvan durmedam hrasithayushah durbhagamscha janan vikshya munir divyena chakshusha sarvanashramanam yad dadhyo hitam moghadrik. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The great sage, who was fully equipped in knowledge, could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and orders of life. Purport. The unmanifested forces of time are so powerful that they reduce all matter to oblivion in due course. In Kali Yuga, the last millennium of a round of four millenniums, the power of all material objects deteriorates by the influence of time. In this age, the duration of the material body of the people in general is much reduced, and so is the memory. The action of matter also has not so much incentive. The land does not produce food grains in the same proportion as it did in other ages. The cow does not give as much milk as it used to give formerly. The production of vegetables and fruits is less than before. As such, all living beings, both men and animals, do not have sumptuous, nourishing food. Due to want of so many necessities of life, naturally the duration of life is reduced, the memory is short, intelligence is meager, mutual dealings are full of hypocrisy, and so on. The great sage Vyasadeva could see this by his transcendental vision. As an astrologer can see the future fate of a man, or an astronomer can foretell the solar and lunar eclipses, those liberated souls who can see through the scriptures can foretell the future of all mankind. They can see this due to their sharp vision of spiritual attainment. All such transcendentalists who are naturally devotees of the Lord are always eager to render welfare service to the people in general. They are the real friends of the people in general, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead. In this age, the people in general, as well as their so-called leaders, are all unlucky fellows, faithless in spiritual knowledge and influenced by the age of Kali. They are always disturbed by various diseases. For example, in the present age, there are so many TB patients, that's tuberculosis, and TB hospitals, but formerly this was not so, because the time was not so unfavorable. Now that in modern age, this was many years ago, you could see the AIDS virus now. It's another example of the Kali Yuga becoming. Everything's becoming more unfavorable, the material situation. The unfortunate men of this age are always reluctant to give a reception to the transcendentalists, who are representatives of Srila Vyasadeva and selfless workers always busy in planning something which may help everyone in all statuses and orders of life. The greatest philanthropists are those transcendentalists who represent the mission of Vyas, Narada, Madhva, Chaitanya, Rupa, Sarasvati, that's Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, etc. They are all one and the same. The personalities may be different, but the aim of the mission is one and the same, namely to deliver the fallen souls back to home, back to Godhead. Om Jnana Timananda Shraganandana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. So here Srila Prabhupada is describing the deteriorated condition of the present age. And that deterioration is increasing. Just looking back at my own life, growing up here in the United States of America, I can recall, even there was a bumper sticker that said, "Do you remember when sex was dirty and the air was clean?" Now it's the opposite. Sex is clean and the air is dirty. So, in every way, the society is degenerated. Formerly, we used to pray in the public schools, and there was no guns, and there was no drugs. But now, the Supreme Court have decided they will bless us with a more enlightened society, where there's no prayer allowed, and now there are drugs and guns. And we saw yesterday one sign, "This is a fight-free school." So they're thinking that, yeah, we're gun-free because we have very good metal detectors. We're a very advanced school. We have very good metal detectors, and that way we're very advanced in education. But this is not advancement in education. They have very good metal detectors at the school. The actual advancement in education is the Vedic wisdom. So the great transcendentalists, as described here by Srila Prabhupada, these selfless workers who are representatives of Srila Vyasadeva, they dedicate their entire life, every moment. It's not that, well, we're working for the welfare of mankind, but we want to go catch the latest movie tonight that's playing, you know, at the theater. What's the latest hot movie, you know, the big, you know, box office bash? No. Just like some doctors go to an epidemic area, what do they have that called? Doctors Without Borders. They go to an epidemic area just to save the people. They can't even meet all the people. They're just trying to save as many as they can. They're working tirelessly around the clock, sleeping for a few hours and getting up and working and to the point of exhaustion and sleeping some more and just going like that day after day after day, week after week, to save the people of the epidemic, you see. This is the mood of these great philanthropists described by Srila Prabhupada. It's not that, well, you know, it's some like an occupation, like you work some job at a company, you don't really care about the company, you just want your salary, and now, you know, you're out of there, and now you're just going to have a good time. You couldn't care less what happens to the company, you see. Not like that. These great philanthropists, they live and breathe the mission of Vyasadeva, you see, who wanted to benefit the people of this age. They live and breathe this mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who brought it in a very easily accessible form by this Nama Sankirtan movement. They dream about it. They live it, they breathe it 24 hours a day in all times, all places, and all circumstances. It's not an occupation for them. It's their very life air. Because they're acutely aware of the reality, even though it may be glossed over by, you know, modern day news media, whatever, the fact is this society is falling apart at the seams. Gradually. will reach a point where if someone is 20 or 30 years old, they'll be considered old men, very old. And even right now, it's happening in Africa in some countries. The leaders of the country are in their 30s. Leaders of the country are in their 30s because people aren't living. So that is coming here also eventually as well. Throughout the entire world, it will be like that. If you make it to 20 or 30, very, very old man. In every way, because Krishna has not been placed in the center. As we were quoting last night, there was one mundane poet, very thoughtful man, Mr. Yeats from Ireland. He wrote, he says, in one poem he said, it was called The Second Coming, actually. It's a spiritual idea of a new age coming. This was his idea. He didn't realize it. What was that new age? But he had some idea of a new age coming in to save the situation. And he described the present situation of the material world as he saw it at that time, which was many decades ago. And he described in this way, he said, things fall apart. The center cannot hold. And mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. So he was seeing a society without a center, actually, with no potent center that could hold things together. That's what he would see was happening. He could see the society was falling apart. Sometimes poets and writers have some, because they're, you know, they're blessed with some understanding of what's actually happening. So he was seeing like that. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. So that is a fact. It is stated here 5,000 years ago, Srimad Bhagavatam, that indeed would be the condition in the Kali Yuga, that things do, the center is disintegrated. God is actually the center. Ishavashamitam sarvam yatkinchab jagajam jagat tena chakchena bunjita magrida kashyasvidhanam. You see? That is described in the Sri Upanishad. That everything animate or inanimate that is within the entire, that's contained within the entire universe, is owned by the Lord. Therefore, one should recognize one should recognize this fact and only take those things necessary for oneself, which are set aside as one's quota by the Supreme. There's plenty of facility to satisfy everyone's needs on this whole planet. Everyone can have their needs met very easily. It's not a problem. But there's not enough to satisfy everyone's greed. You see, that is the difficulty. Though, as they say, the weak shall, the strong shall rule and the weak shall serve. So those who are strong in intelligence and strong in body, they exploit those who are weak in intelligence and weak in body, just like human beings eating the animals, for example. Or taking advantage of third world countries for their own economic advancement in this way. Or taking advantage of poor people. So in this way, exploitation is going on. And those who have are able to get away with being greedy, they let others remain in a very needy condition, and even a starving condition. As we see now in some African countries, people are just starving to death. If we could, in this country, if we could simply stop our nasty habit of eating rotten flesh, and we could take all these grains that we're feeding to the livestock to fatten them up very nicely for our steak dinners, you see. We could simply send these grains to the people. Our livestock they will not suffer. We just let them have some nice grass. They can eat grass very nicely and be very happy, you see. They may not be very fatty for our barbecue pit after that, but we don't need to barbecue our brothers and sisters, you see. So let the grains go to the people who are starving, instead of fattening up our American, you know, unhealthy diet. Why not feed the grains to the people who need it? I know I grew up on a my I didn't grow up, but my grandfather, he was a farmer. And he had, of course, as a little child, I would go riding on the corn harvesting time. And it, to me, it was like an unlimited ocean of corn. I mean, it must have been a mile long by, it must have been a square, it seemed like a square mile at least, if I think about it now, but it was like an unlimited ocean of corn. And we would just go up and down the rows. It was an amazing machine. You just go down the row and it just automatically, the ears of corn are flying through the air and flying into the back of the bin behind the tractor. Amazing machine. The Americans really have it together. And high tech, I mean, it was amazing. India, they've got their packing it, picking it by hand. This one machine just plows through and hundreds of ears of corn flying through the air. It's amazing to see. So anyway, all this corn, it was amazing enough, instead of being sent for people to eat, it was going into some bins where it would dry out and they would feed it to the livestock. That's a huge quantity of corn. As far as a little child's eye could see, it was an unlimited ocean of corn. Unlimited ocean. And it was all going for cattle. Fatten them up so there's nice juicy steaks. Mm-hmm. So, it doesn't have to. If Krishna consciousness is reintroduced to the world society, there doesn't have to be this condition described here. The nature of the age, though, is that this condition comes in. Those who take to Krishna consciousness very seriously, very purely, very seriously following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and the great acharyas, those personalities will actually be protected by Krishna. They'll be living in a different dimension, actually. In the midst of all of this chaos, they will be connected with the ultimate center of everything. Such person, such enlightened person, will actually be happy and Krishna will personally protect them. Daivi hiesha gunamayi mama maya darat ija. There's that divine energy. Mamupecha punarjanma. This repetition of birth and death, you see, that is for those who are in the situation of material consciousness. But someone who actually comes to the transcendental platform by taking shelter of Krishna, they are no longer under the influence of the material nature. These greats, Mahatmanas Tumang Partha, Daivin Prakritam Ashrita, you see, they are under the divine energy, spiritual energy. Those people who take shelter of Krishna. So, the point is that one does not have to be suffering within the deteriorating influences of the age of Kali. If one will very seriously take up this pathway of Krishna Bhakti, chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then one will be protected from the influence of the age, the degradation of consciousness. Is inevitable for those who do not take shelter of the Lord, because the age itself is deteriorating in all ways, degrading and deteriorating. So those who are not plugged in, they become deteriorated. Just like at the look at the standard, just look at the youth in India, how much they're deteriorating now in Bombay compared to way, 50 years ago. But they're very pious, disciplined children now. They're going, they've got their iPods and their mobile phones and they're cool, grooving along, Western sense gratification, illicit sex and drugs. Mm-hmm. Well, to speak of what's happening in the Western world, 13-year-olds take guns to school and shoot, hide in the bushes outside the schoolyard and send somebody to pull an alarm so everybody comes out of the school and starts shooting everyone dead. School children in the Western world. So things are very much chaotic condition. Therefore, the sages, the great personality. And as Prabhupada says, the personalities may be different. So there are many great transcendentalists. And these transcendentalists, of course, they're a very small percentage of the world population. They're just like needle in a haystack to find such a person. But those persons are there, we see, as Prabhupada gives these names. Vyas, Narada, Madhva, Chaitanya, Rupa. Of course, Prabhupada is one of the very prominent of these great acharyas. So they have this mission. And if we can cooperate and assist them in this mission, see, then our lives become glorious, absolutely glorious. We can continue living comfortably in with our families, with our jobs, and our household. That's all right. But we should dedicate ourselves to this mission of these great acharyas. Is not that the Vedic injunction? Mahajano yena gatasya panta. One should follow that pathway chalked out by the great acharyas. We should not think that simply by making some money, getting our children nicely educated so they're able to make some money, is that success in life? Simply money? Some material success? We're still going to get old, get sick, and die. And because of the sinful nature of the age, generally people are going down to the animal kingdom in the next lifetime. Animal kingdom. Is that a success? That we and our family members become animals at our next birth? Is that our success? No. That is failure. Therefore, we should follow this path of the great acharyas. We should take very, very seriously this Krishna consciousness process. We are not sectarian. Any system, that is our end. If you want to follow Christianity or anything, if you can develop love of God, that is the whole point. We say Krishna, but we don't say Krishna in a sectarian sense. You can only, we are not like some people say, if you don't accept so and so, you're going to hell. No. We say if you want to worship with the name of Krishna or the name of Christ or Allah, that is Jehovah, whatever name you may take from the revealed scripture, that is all right. But you must come to the standard principle of love of God. That love of God will be seen by how much you are detached from material sense gratification. That is the actual symptom. Not that I can rubber stamp myself, oh, I'm a Hare Krishna, or I'm a Hindu, or I'm a Christian, or I'm... It's by rubber stamping that I become saved from cycle of birth and death. No. You cannot rubber stamp yourself out of the cycle of birth and death. The Yamadutas don't recognize those rubber stamps. They want to see... Two books, two record books going on. Yamaraj has a record book. Yamaraj has great power. He can see what everyone is doing. The Lord of Death. He can see the sinful activities. And a person whose life is full of sinful activities, the Yamadutas, the agents of Yamaraj, come at the time of death to say, well, guess what? You're coming with us. Come on. One may protest, but they put some subtle, they take some noose and they grab and they rip the body out of the subtle body out of the gross body and take you to Yamaloka so you can get your reactions for your sinful activities. But if one is Krishna conscious, one dedicates one's life in the service of the Lord, then the Yamadutas will not come. The Vishnu Dutas will come to take you back to home, back to Godhead. So whatever we're doing, it's being netted down either in Yamaraja's book or in Krishna's book. So which book do you want to be in? Which book do you want to be recorded in? We have a choice. Which book should I be in? Yamaraja's book or Krishna's book? The persons who are inclined to sense gratification, oh, that's just a bunch of, allegory. It's just a bunch of, it's just a bunch of mythology to, written by poetically minded writers to encourage people to be good to one another. because society really can't function unless we're good to one another. So this is just some poetic way of, you know, inspiring people to be good to one another. That's all. And if I can be good without religion, then it doesn't matter. It's all the same. If I'm intelligent enough to know that I should be good to my next door neighbor, even without religion, then that means I'm more advanced. I don't require those fairy tales. They're for little children. You see, I'm higher level than them. I actually love everyone. I'm an atheist, but I really love everyone. Especially I love my steaks medium rare. You see, if you love, you cannot say you're actually a loving person if you're eating your brothers and sisters just because they're less intelligent. You can't say you're a loving person. If you say I love animals, they're so cute, I pet them at the zoo, you know, whatever. But I eat them also. So that's, you can't really eat the object of your affection. I love the little four-legged ones. No. If you actually love, then you will not cause distress. You cannot cause misery or anxiety to that which you love, that whom you love. And you must serve them and always see that they're happy and satisfied. So it's mentioned here in the purport. Now, Srila Prabhupada tells the men and animals, you see, they're not getting sufficient food. Especially you see in India, he says, both men and animals do not have sumptuous nourishing food. In India, you can really see the poor animals are all just, their ribs are showing, they're just like walking skeletons in India. It feels so good that we go to Vrindavan, we just get some bananas, we buy some bananas and just feed them to the cows. It feels good because they're so skinny, they're so hungry. The poor animals are so hungry in India. And that's a sign of what's coming all over the world, such a condition. So we have to really appreciate these great personalities, what they're doing for us. They're saving, they are dedicating everything, giving up their own personal sense gratification for the sake of helping us to be happy. We should reciprocate with these great personalities by serving their mission, actually. We should reciprocate with them. If they're giving everything for us, then we should show our appreciation. Shishi Radha Damodar Ki Jai. We should show them. We should show our appreciation by assisting them in every way we can. There's four ways we can assist these great personalities. We can give our whole life. We can just dedicate ourselves as a full-time volunteer for their mission. Give up everything else and just be a full-time volunteer. Working in the direction of the spiritual master and other, you know, whatever project we may serve in ISKCON, we could do that as a full-time volunteer, like go to Mayapur, or, you know, go to any place, Austin, any place we could go and offer ourselves as a full-time volunteer to help the mission. That's there. There's also, someone may not be able to do that. So what's the next best, what's as dear as life? Money. So you can give money. Whatever money you can afford to give, you give that to help the mission. And if you're struggling just to put bread on the table, you can't give any money, then you can give your intelligence. You may have some friends who can give some money. Convince them to give something. Or if you have, that is not available, then at least you can give your words. You can tell people, chant Hare Krishna, read this book, Bhagavad Gita. You see, in this way, you can give your words. You can tell other people about Krishna. So in that way, you can also serve these great personalities. Whatever way we can serve, with our life, with our money, with our intelligence, or with our words, at least with one of these, we must serve the mission of these great liberated personalities who are given everything to deliver the suffering people of this age, and the animals also, from their problems. So such a life is actually very glorious. It's a life of giving, as we were describing recently. In Vrindavan, we see the mood is giving, just like Jashoda, Kirti Da. Da means giving. So the more we can be in this mood of giving, 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 that is the spiritual mood. That is the mood of happiness, of bliss. If you're in the mood of take, 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 I'm going to take as much as I can, you know, take as much as I can, I'm going to grab it fast and run, you see. That mentality is a dirty, miserly mentality, and a miser means miserable. Same word, miser, miserable. But the person who gives, the more we can give of ourselves for the benefit of others, that will liberate us from all the miserable misery of miserliness, which is plaguing us. Everyone's a miser in this material world to a certain extent. Great, more or less, everyone's a miser here. Starts off, little child, mine. Tells the other child, you cannot play with that toy because it's mine. You see, it's miserliness, isn't it? And you have a number of children growing up, don't they do that? Mine. They grab it, mine. Isn't it? It's miserliness. And that mentality is a miserable mentality, but we carry it on as adults. Same thing. Same thing, we just sublimate it, that's all. We make it a little more subtle so it's not so blatantly obvious, but it's still there. Still there. So by giving up this miserly tendency and developing this mood of giving, now where should we give? We should give to those persons who are free from miserliness. If we give to persons who are still in a condition of miserliness, then that does not free us from miserliness. You see? We have to give our energy, give our money, give our words, give our intelligence to those persons who are acting on the platform beyond miserliness. That service to those who are miserliness, that will liberate us from miserliness. So since we're going to spend our energy serving this or that, why don't we serve those persons who are free from the tendency to be miserly? You see, that's intelligence. Find those persons who are not miserly and serve them. And that's how we become free of being misers ourselves. I was fortunate. I met such a personality. The divine grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa. Padiva Jakacharya Astatarazadashishimad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupad. I met such a person who was completely free of any miserly tendencies, who was simply dedicating every ounce of his energy, 24 hours a day, to give the greatest gift to all others. So I realized I just have to serve this person. I have nothing else to do except serve him, that's all. I gave my life to Prabhupada. My money also. The only thing I had of value was a guitar. And the temple was short of rent money, so I sold my prized guitar that I had performed on stages, and thousands of people had cheered, and you know, it was a great attachment for me. I had appeared along with the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead at a concert one time, playing that guitar. Naturally, you'd be very attached to such a guitar, but I immediately sold it to serve Prabhupada's mission. Because the temple needed some rent money. So I said, all right. I called someone up, he immediately came and bought it. He knew it was a very valuable guitar, he immediately bought it. And we had the money to pay the rent that month. I immediately gave up my strongest material attachment, my guitar, to pay the temple rent money, you see. So I found such a person who was completely free of all material desires. And I said, I simply have to serve this person, that's all. For all of eternity. Janme, Janme, Prabhu say, you are my Lord birth after birth. I must serve Prabhupada eternally. And so, so I made that decision. I realized that this is my duty as a human being to serve such a great enlightened personality. And I haven't regretted it. I've simply become more and more satisfied as time has passed, as the years, as decades have gone by, actually. Decade after decade after decade of engaging myself in service to the lotus feet of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, I've simply realized more and more and more how proper my decision was to do that, to just totally give myself to Prabhupada. Whatever He wants to do with me, that's all right. I'm simply His servant for all of eternity. If He wants me to stay in the material world to preach here, if He wants me to go back to Gaia, He wants me to go, I don't care what, if He wants me to go to hell to preach in Patala Loka, I don't care. Whatever Prabhupada wants me to do, that's it. That's my life. Because He is one of these great sages, you see, who's acting for the welfare of everyone. So therefore, I must serve Him. I have no other existence. Anything else is just miserly and miserable. But this is absolutely ecstatic. As it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, how it becomes a thrill at every moment, you see. At every second, it is a thrill. If one can hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and also apply it very nicely, then every moment of one's existence will be absolutely thrilling. And that thrill, that excitement will go on increasing and become more and more thrilling and more and more thrilling and more and more thrilling. That is Krishna consciousness. So you may say, but, you know, I'm attached to my pet rock. I can't give it up. But you might consider how much benefit you're getting from your pet rock. Maybe it's worth dropping your pet rock and swimming across the boundary line between the material and spiritual consciousness. Maybe it's worth it. Something to consider. Maybe it's worth it giving up material consciousness completely. Saying, that's it, I'm going to become a pure devotee now. No more material consciousness. I'm just going to do it. If it's too much, just make a commitment for one lifetime. If you can't fathom doing it for all of eternity, just say, okay, I've had so many births and deaths trying to be a successful materialistic sense enjoyer. Where did it get me? Still suffering here. So why not try just giving one life completely to Krishna? Totally. Completely, 100% to Krishna, and then just judge by the result. If Krishna didn't keep His end of the bargain, then I can say, okay, I'll come back again to the material world and try to enjoy again. Krishna was just some, this Krishna consciousness movement was just hyping me, you see. Just a bunch of hot air, Hare Krishna hype. They're just trying to brainwash me with this, you know, cultish dogma, you see, that man didn't come from the apes, you see, that man was actually, you know, that Brahma was the first intelligent being in the universe, and he was highly, and he's still there, and he's got four heads. Just a bunch of mythology. Actually, we just came out of we're simians, you know, descendants of the ape-like ancestors. We share a common, forefather with our brother the orangutan, and our brother the gorilla, and our brother the monkey. So, you can try for one lifetime. Just try giving yourself completely in the service of Krishna and these great acharyas, and judge by the result. If you don't like it, take birth again. And the benefit is, even if you take out bhakti and you're not completely satisfied with it, you at least go to the heavenly planets in the next life. You become You know, you become a demigod in the heavenly kingdom in your next birth. So what are you going to lose? Either go back to Godhead, or you become a demigod. So you can't lose. Either way, you came out ahead. But if we send a man this life from a sense gratification, well, we can't even guarantee you'll be a human being in your next life. Sorry. I can't guarantee you'll be a human being next lifetime. So we appreciate very much the great mercy of these personalities upon us, and now let us, we should be, if we don't appreciate them, we should be appreciating. That is, we should come to that position of very much appreciating this great mercy they have upon us, and then doing something about it, showing them that we really appreciate the great kindness they have bestowed upon us. That's what we should do. Okay. So, are there any questions? Yes, I can hear you. Speak very loudly and clearly.
Okay, many people think that we really speak that the life duration has been shortened, but many people think that now that with modern technology, life is increasing.
Yeah. They say that we're increasing the lifespan by modern technology. But actually, my experience is different than that. My great-grandfather, those generation, they were living to be 90 and 100 years of age. I've seen practically. That is my experience. Formerly, in my own in my particular family line, people were living 90, 100 years old. But now they are not.
But they can save people from cancer.
They didn't have all these diseases then. Try to understand. Oh, we're advanced now with cancer treatment. We can treat this. The diseases weren't running so rampant then. People were healthier. The air was clean. The water was clean. People lived in open spaces. There wasn't so much crime everywhere. There's so many things disturbing the mind. It was a much more peaceful atmosphere where one was naturally healthy. People lived on farms in the old days in this country. This was an agrarian-based country previously. It was an agricultural country. The majority of the population lived on the farms in this country previously, in a very healthy atmosphere, self-sufficient farmers. That was the original economy of this country, was self-sufficient farmers who weren't depending on outside, oil coming in from Iraq to keep the economy going. We hope.
But someone might say, people may just recognize that diseases were there, but now we have found the diseases and we have found the cure.
We have found the disease, yes, but the disease wasn't existing so bad previously. You have created these diseases by your modern day culture. Don't you understand? These diseases are created by you. By your sinful activities, you have brought the karma of so many diseases. Because previously men were much more pious, these diseases weren't going on like this. You have created these diseases by your sinful activities, rascal. Sorry. Manaji's not a rascal. It's just a philosophical point. This is a rascal philosophy. This is our point. Actually, we appreciate and love everyone, because they're all part and parcel of Krishna. But the rascal philosophy, that we did not accept. That life is coming out of matter, and simply by manipulating matter we can solve all the problems of existence. We do not accept that philosophy. It's a rascal philosophy. That's the reality. It is. It's a rascal philosophy. It's like saying there's a pile of rice and I saw a scorpion come out of, a scorpion was born out of that pile of rice. So I can understand that rice gives birth to scorpions. No. A mother scorpion laid its egg in the pile of rice. That's how the scorpion came out of the pile of rice. It's not that the rice gave birth to a scorpion. A mother scorpion gave birth to the scorpion. But these scientists, they say, oh yes, we are observing the pile of rice and we saw a scorpion come out. So therefore we can understand that life has evolved from dead matter. Then prove it. Take dead matter and make a living thing. You see? But no, they want to build a whole culture now on this principle that life is arising out of dead matter. They want to build a whole culture on it, all based on science and technology, that we can manipulate matter in any way, you know, to do whatever we want. And one scientist, he said, I just being very careful to live for at least 20 more years by taking vitamins, exercising, making sure I wear my seatbelt, etc., because I'm sure that in 20 years that they will have some little thing they can put in your bloodstream and you'll become immortal. He's saying it. He's actually stating that, one scientist. In 20 years, we will be immortal. So you just got to make it for 20 more years and we'll be all right. Good luck. That's all I can say is good luck. The laws of nature are going on whether you like it or not, Mr. Scientist. Birth, death, old age, and disease. If you want to conquer over the laws of nature, then you can do that by following the system which is given there within the universal structure itself, and that is called spiritual enlightenment, Krishna consciousness. If you want to conquer the laws of nature, there's a way you can easily do that. You just have to come out of the influence of the laws of nature. The laws of nature will go on. You simply have to come out of the influence of the laws of nature by taking shelter of Krishna. That's all. The spiritual nature is there and the material nature is there. Both will go on as they are going. They will go on eternally as they are going. But you can situate yourself either in the spiritual nature or the material nature. You have the power of choice which nature you want to be within. The material nature is a nature of enslavement, and the spiritual nature is a nature of complete, total freedom. So you choose which one you want. Your choice. You have the free choice to choose which nature you want to be in, the material nature or the spiritual nature. Any other questions? Yes. When we say give, give,
a non-miserly person.
A non-miserly person is always giving, yeah.
Does non-miserly person is equivalent to a Krishna conscious person?
Are we referring to a Krishna conscious person? We say a non-miserly person is always giving. Well, there's different types of giving. We could talk about giving in the mode of ignorance, which is not very good. Giving to a beggar on the side of the street who uses money for liquor, that's giving in the mode of ignorance. There are people who give in that way, who give in the mode of ignorance, or give in the mode of passion, for giving a donation that will give them some recognition as being a great personality, that's giving in the mode of passion. Or giving with some sense, without wanting the external recognition, giving anonymously, but thinking, yes, I'm so humble, I'm so saintly, that's you could say that's giving in the mode of goodness. You don't want the external recognition, but in your own mind, though, you still think, I am great because I gave anonymously, and I am great because I gave anonymously for a good cause. But we're taught the real giving the real giving is in the mode of, is pure goodness. That is the real giving, which is free of any material tinges. The other giving is there, and it's better than not giving. Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita, if you can't come to the highest platform of pure goodness, then you can do some welfare work also. In the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions that. Because at least the principle of giving is a start. The giving may not be perfect, but at least if one has this feeling, I must give to others, that's a very good thing. Even if he's foolishly giving to the beggar on the street and getting some bad karma for doing it, at least he has the idea he should be giving to others. So that's a very good thing. Anyone is in the mood of giving is a very good thing. But there's good, there's better, and there's best. You see. So for one to actually achieve perfection by giving, then you must come to the platform, the spiritual platform. Whether you call it Krishna consciousness or Christ consciousness is not the issue. But Krishna consciousness is a very good word for it. It is the platform of pure giving. Simply giving for the pleasure of God and for the ultimate benefit of that person, which is to reawaken their dormant God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. If I give simply for your body, it's good in one sense. But in another sense, actually, it is an act of violence. I'm saying, oh, my dear starving man, I want you to be happy. So here, eat this. It's good what I've done. But it's incomplete because I've reinforced his bodily identification. That you can be happy by feeding that body. It's absolutely essential because you can't hear philosophy of Bhagavad Gita if your mind is disturbed by hunger, obviously. So we are not, in Krishna consciousness, we don't say, oh, just forget the body and just give the spiritual. No. Our agenda is that every man, woman, child, and animal on this planet should be well-fed and happy. The animals also should be well-fed. We don't want to even see an animal going hungry. That's our Krishna consciousness philosophy. So the giving remains imperfect until you come to the platform of actually connecting that person with pleasing Krishna by that act of giving, which means to connect that person with Krishna. In pure bhakti, not a type of connection where they're going to God and begging for material thing. Where that person is taught pure bhakti. That is actual giving. Sometimes they criticize. One reporter in New York, he was criticizing and say, Swamiji, we see that your workers are not doing any humanitarian service besides feeding some, giving some free meals at the temple, they're not doing any service for the humanity. He was criticizing. We see that they're not opening hospitals. Of course, actually we did now. We have opened one in Bombay. But he was that way he was criticizing. And Prabhupada told him, you do not know what is actual service. You do not know what is service. And he actually, the man had some humility. He said, I guess I'm just swimming in ignorance. I mean, he took a humble position. He was a respectful man. It's a very enlivening interview, which is available if you want to hear it. You can seek it out. Anybody who wants to hear that can seek it out and hear it. It's a pretty amazing interview. We have it recorded. Anybody who has the MP3 collection, and they have it. Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful. And he also criticized that, you know, why do you ask your followers to dress in, for what the West is such a strange fashion? Stand on the street corners and play drums and dress in such a strange fashion. Prabhupada said, that is our preaching method to somehow or other get your attention. I mean, it's not that unusual, actually. If you go to Disney World, you know, don't the employees of Disney World have a certain uniform they wear? Seeing, recognize this is, you know, Mickey Mouse's people or whatever. Do they wear little mouse ears or something? Employees at Disneyland, Disney World? Huh?
I think so.
Anyway, you go to McDonald's, they have McDonald's uniform, isn't it? Everybody else has a uniform, so why we can't have a uniform? That's discrimination. Everybody else can have a uniform, and you're not allowed to have one. Isn't that discrimination? You know, the cheerleaders get to wear a uniform. The football players get to wear a uniform. In the high school, right? The cheerleaders get to wear a uniform. Everybody gets to wear a few uniforms, but you cannot wear a uniform because yours is, you're doing it for God. That's not allowed, you see. Just see how that's an atheistic thing. They don't want to see a person in religious garb, but everybody other garb is all right. But religious garb, no, that's not good. That's bad. Why? Because it reminds people of God, and when they're engaged in sinful activity, it's the last thing they want to do is think of God. The last thing they want to do is remind, oh my God, I'm doing sinful things. You know, they say even, oh my God, isn't it? People don't want to be, they don't want, and they criticize, oh, they're wearing, they shouldn't dress like that. It's not nice. So anyway, any other question? Any material thing can be, if you can use light in Krishna's service, there's no reason to give it up. You can, that is our philosophy. If you have some material thing and you can use it for Krishna, then it's no longer a source of bondage for you. If you can engage that material thing in the service of Krishna, then that will liberate you from this material existence. It's like now, of course, then I was, that's my only possession. Now I have, Krishna has given me so many things engaged in his service. This house is here, and the car, and laptop, computer, you know, microphone, a light, a watch, so many things. But because we're using them all in the service of Krishna, it is not material, it's spiritual. And if something is not useful, then we can get rid of it, no problem. The hope, the only attachment is to be attached to Krishna. And whatever can be used for him, our program is to actually engage the whole world in Krishna's service. So we're not against material things. We want to engage, we say, very good. If you can give me a check for $5 million, I will immediately take. No problem. We can get some nice land here and build a, you know, get some nice wooded land and build nice scenic wooden land here and around the Austin area. And then build a nice ashram there, and you know, that you all can each have a little space, build a nice house there. And we can build a nice temple. Just like we've seen in New Goloka in North Carolina, that beautiful wooded area there on the bank of a river. And they have, some of the householders have houses there, just, you know, it's a very nice temple and grounds there and pavilion. It's very serene, and we spent like 5 or 6 days there. It was like heaven, having lunch with Veer Krishna Maharaj every day. It's very nice atmosphere. So if we have, if you give me a check for $5 million and it doesn't bounce, I mean, we can buy a nice property like that here around the Austin area, and I get a huge, nice acreage, with wooded acreage, and make a beautiful, beautiful spiritual atmosphere. So we're not against any material things. Money, we'll be very happy to have as much money as you'd like to give. No problem. Questions more?
ISKCON has a Food for Life program all over the world.
Yes.
So then the people come for their free lunch or free dinner.
Yes, yes.
Are they, do the devotees give them japamala along with the food or no?
It depends. There's so many different varieties of situations. Where our devotees went to, after the tsunami hit Sri Lanka, our devotees went there and they were feeding these poor, devastated villagers. And they would also engage them in kirtan. So whatever they can, yes, when the devotees go for distributing food for life, it depends on the people. It really depends on who you're ministering to. If the people are receptive, and the devotees certainly do preach to them, oh yeah. And if they're not so receptive, then they may not do so much, just let the Pashadam do its work. And they have some tape playing in the background or something, so they hear some kirtan while they're eating, you know, taking prasadam. Depends on the situation. But devotees always don't want to just simply give them prasadam. They want to give them the chant Hare Krishna also. Definitely.
Just give out the mala to everybody and they take home and put it in their corner.
Yeah, giving mala without training. You have to inspire them to actually chant. That's the most important thing. You have to convince them. They have to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that if they're devastated by hunger, obviously you have to feed them sufficiently to where their mind become a little peaceful, so they can hear philosophy. But actually, we can engage them in kirtan, just like we have one video. The devotees were doing a food for life program to senior citizens in Russia, and they, all these old Russian people who've grown up in under the communist regime, who were very, very, very subdued and like hanging their heads down kind of people, because it was a very oppressive culture. But they were all chanting the kirtan. They were singing very softly, like very, very conservative. Hare Krishna. With a huge, you know, big room full of people. We have video footage of it. The devotees engaging the people in the old senior citizens, Russian senior citizens, and chanting the kirtan. Yes?
Philanthropists,
they donate money to
Vrindavan Temple for food for life. So when all the poor people come, every
day, they turn poor because the whole area gets filled up. Yeah. And they feed them prasadam, and before giving them prasadam, they all chant Hare Krishna.
How many times?
Everyone chants Hare Krishna, and then they take prasadam. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So as far as possible, yes. I mean, I've seen sometimes in America, not necessarily, you know, some bunch of derelicts coming in. Well, maybe they won't chant, but whenever possible, yes, certainly get people to chant.
But prasadam itself is purifying. It's not
just... Yeah, the prasadam itself is purifying them spiritually. If someone takes prasadam, then that memory of that prasadam will... go with them. They'll never lose that memory. Prasadam is very special.
One time, Gurudev, you mentioned that even at the time of the dead, person remembers the word prasadam. That will be also nice.
Actually, Prabhupada said like that one time. If somebody can remember prasadam at the time of death, they'll come back as a human being. So prasadam is very potent. And my godbrother, he was a little boy. His name was Dwarkadish Das. Prabhupada used to call him Mr. DDD. And he one time fed some ducks prasadam in a duck pond in Dallas. And he wrote Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, those ducks will take birth as human beings in the next birth because they got prasadam. So prasadam is very potent. Even if you feed it to an animal, the animal will take human birth the next lifetime. What does it speak of a human being? The animal, of course, the human being is engaged in sin, the animal isn't. So the animal has some advantage. If you feed an animal prasadam, they immediately get a human birth. Human being, though, will get an opportunity, very good opportunity. Well, that's why restaurants are very good. Krishna conscious restaurants are a very good thing. We're seeing in our center in Riga, Latvia, that restaurant is doing tremendous preaching, because people come to the restaurant and they have some classes, Vedic culture, Vedic civilization classes, and people enroll in Vedic civilization classes. They learn all about Vedic civilization and they become devotees. Just by coming to the restaurant and getting prasadam, the whole thing unfolds.
The restaurant is not free. They have to pay for money for that.
Yeah, they pay good money. Not a free, they have a free food prasadam program there too, and they did anyway. Food for life they had. I don't know if they still have, but anyway, yeah, whether they pay for it, they get it for free. And we just came from Denver, and there they have a very nice vegetarian buffet, and it was so much appreciated. They have a rating system in Denver, and they were rated as the number one vegetarian restaurant in Denver. and they received a letter from their U.S. congresswoman from Washington congratulating them on their buffet. While we were there, they got a letter from Washington, the congresswoman for their district, U.S. congresswoman, very much appreciated their buffet. So this is a way, this is a way that we can, prasadam crosses all cultural barriers. Everybody's interested in exotic cuisine from other cultures. So definitely a way to bridge the cultural gap. We formerly had a vegetarian restaurant here near the campus called Govinda's Supernatural Foods. Very much appropriate name for Austin. Supernatural Foods. We hope someday we can reopen Govinda's Supernatural Foods here in Austin. That's one of our goals here. When I have that nice property with a temple, we also want to have a restaurant. Govinda's Supernatural Foods, reopen someday. So, I think we'll stop here. Thank you very much.